I always feel a little bit awkward talking when our Lord is here exposed. I certainly don't mind if you decide to look at him rather than me. I also feel a little awkward having smoked everybody out. Now you can cough to death while I try to say a few words to you to inspire your prayer, or maybe at least lead you into your final agony and asphyxiation, whatever that might be. But maybe if we could just pray for each other for a moment. Ask that the Lord would draw us into his mystery. And let us ask for Our Lady's help. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. I want to say a few words about prayer, since that's what we're doing, and I want to always help you enter into this beautiful time. We'll have some protracted time of prayer here in front of the Blessed Sacrament, so it is a beautiful opportunity. I think that a couple of the comments, questions that some of you have given me will kind of fold themselves nicely into this. Yeah, I think very nicely. The basic theme in terms of prayer is really praying from our need, praying from our wounds. And I want to draw from an article written by Father Ian Matthews, who's a Carmelite, really an expert on St. John of the Cross. Again, I'm not an expert on St. John of the Cross, but I like turning to the experts. And one of the things that he does for us is especially draw from some insights in the Ascent of Mount Carmel and in the Dark Night of the Soul, the two works that it's not clear St. Thérèse had so much access to, or she certainly quoted from those the least, and it's a little bit questionable because the access, it's not like today where you can look all these things up on the internet, you know, and it's not like she could go out to the library when she was there in Carmel. So she had some limited access. In any event, she certainly doesn't draw as much from the ascent or the night. And Father Ian Matthews will help us to draw a little bit from that. But especially inviting us to pray from, just like we started our conferences with last night, a night full of fruitlessness. We have caught nothing. And even as that goes deeper, we don't know what the apostles were feeling, but sometimes that taps into some wounds. We feel the failure. This is what I'm supposed to be able to do as a fisherman, is catch something. And so the fact that I've caught nothing actually is also a wound, or is tied in with a wound. I feel like a failure. Maybe it's even connected with somebody's rejection of me, or some feeling of abandonment. And Father Matthews, again, interpreting the teaching of John of the Cross, tells us how this doesn't have to become a dead end, something that we need to sequester off and shove somewhere else, but can be something that certainly we bring into our human relationships, and that's a very beautiful thing. We can open up those wounds and find so much healing in being understood and loved. We can do that also in our prayer. And that can become a very fruitful way of prayer, to go right to those places where we feel the ache, the need, the wound. So with that little introduction, I want to just weave in a question or two or three that were posed to me. One person asked, "The joy of suffering is hard to understand in St. Thérèse. Is it related to what you were saying when you explained that the beauty of Christ was hidden by the misery of his passion to us, that we see his beauty in our suffering, or that he sees our beauty in our suffering. Please clarify. And yes, beautifully expressed. So that's the mystery. Now, whether we're talking about Saint Therese or we're talking about us, the thing about suffering is that it hurts. You know, there's no way around that. It wouldn't be suffering if it didn't hurt. And so that's a very real thing. Whenever we're talking, you know, we sort of place these things in some nice language, and we want to, we're really trying to show a paradox. That's the amazing thing, is that there can be two things going on simultaneously, that we really feel the pain, and there's no glossing over that. It's real. The pain that we feel, whether it's physically in our bodies or in a certain agony and ache and need in our souls, whatever the wound is, we feel the pain. That's real. And we're not going to just, you know, oh, well, if you just say some pious prayers, then like all the pain goes away and it just disappears into this wonderful thing. And no, that's morphine. it's not what we're recommending here. It's not morphine. Prayer is not morphine. And the pain is real. But there is, in a mysterious way, also something else that pours into that. And sometimes it comes with this act of faith that there's something beautiful there, like the Passion of Christ. And that the very fact, this is one of those places that He comes into us and we go into Him. I might stand before a crucifix and I say, what does it feel like? And when I find myself in some pain, physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual, whatever that pain is that comes, I'm getting a little taste of what it feels like. It's an answer to my question. What does it feel like from the inside? We're not feeling everything He felt, but we might be feeling as much of what He felt as we can possibly feel. Our part in it. You know, we're only a member of the body of Christ. We're not the whole Christ. None of us is the whole Christ. But He draws us into parts of His body, parts of His suffering, parts of His darkness, parts of His agony, parts of His anguish, parts of His physical suffering, parts of His emotional suffering. He draws us in so that we experience it from the inside. And there's an interesting freedom that comes in that when I say, what am I feeling in this moment? And when we have someone like Saint Therese who's able to write poetry from the midst of her darkness, describing the agony, or Saint John of the Cross, where have you hidden, beloved, and left me groaning? You fled like a stag, having wounded me. I went out in search of you, and you were gone. This is describing real suffering, real agony, real longing. But the fact that He can express it indicates a level of freedom. The very fact of saying it is an act of hope. It's when we stop saying it that there's danger. As long as we can express it, we're declaring it valuable enough, worthwhile enough, worthy of expression. And that's an act of hope. We're seeing some goodness, some fruitfulness, some value in that suffering. And now you can see how it starts to blend together. Real suffering, it's not going away, but then also real beauty, real value. There's something there that's worth expressing, worth turning into poetry. And in fact, these mysteries we can only really express in poetry. It's why all the mystics find their way into poetry, because it's somehow with symbols, with expression, with glimpses, flashes, that we can just touch or display in some way the mystery of what's going on inside of us. But that's what St. John of the Cross, that's what St. Therese, they give us courage also to express our own sufferings. No one should ever devalue their suffering to say, oh, it's not that much. Other people have suffered worse. Well, I'm sure that's true, but this is the suffering that I have. And this is what God has chosen to entrust to me. little or great, it's what I have. It's the part that he's shared with me. And it's the part that I can share with others, whoever it is that is able to receive that. Maybe, hopefully, someone immediately already in my life, maybe a confessor, a spiritual director, a close friend, a spouse, a parent, a child, a friend. Maybe it's also for future generations. How many were able to take in the suffering of Saint Therese, but how many more have taken it in subsequent generations? God's the master of that whole dispensation. But to come back to the question, this joy in suffering, it's one of the reasons that it's valuable to reflect on these things in advance, so that when suffering hits us, because it's always a surprise, it's never what we expected. If it were, it probably wouldn't be the level of suffering that it is. It always hits us by surprise, but at some point, perhaps a light that we lit previously in our prayer, reading Saint Therese, reading John of the Cross, knowing that a night would come, that a time of suffering would come, in the midst of the suffering, after we get up from being knocked over by it in surprise, maybe we're able to make that act of faith and that light is still burning and we say, oh, this is what I was preparing for. Oh, this is what John told me was coming. And suddenly I have a little light of faith, a little light of hope that gives me a little bit of strength, and I say, oh, maybe I can even get excited. This means that God is taking me another step forward. And so the suffering is still there, it's real, but there's a little flicker of joy that comes up in that and maybe helps me take one step more. Maybe helps me to sketch a little verse, draw a little picture, express and ask for help, to cry out from the pain. And a little flicker of joy maybe becomes a little bit brighter flame and helps me to take one more step. This is the way that beauty, joy, hope start to infuse suffering, without over-romanticizing, lest we would find ourselves in the suffering really weighed down by it and tempted to think, I must be a terrible Carmelite if I can't suffer this with more joy. Where's all my joy? Well, it's not easy. It's not easy. But can I find a little light? Take a little step. Can I see beneath the mask of the holy face, when I look in the spiritual mirror, can I see a little glimpse of the suffering Christ who's closer to me than ever? Can I find myself hidden away in one of his wounds as I feel weighed down? A little glimpse, hopefully, helps with that question. And another person asked a question that I really love. And again, it's connected with this. Because when we talk about this way of imperfection, or this way for the imperfect, this way for those who are on the way, and we say, we start now. We don't worry about all that we could have done or where we could be or whether we're somehow disqualified because of everything that happened in the past. No, nobody is disqualified. Anybody who hears my voice can start now. Now is the acceptable time. Today is the day of salvation. We enter into this today, into this eternal moment. But someone asked the question, and it's very insightful. Well, isn't our humanity kind of damaged, maybe, from the things that we've done? Maybe we've gotten ourselves into a cycle of addiction. Maybe we've damaged our minds or damaged our body in some way. And what impact does that have? Still no disqualification. Whatever we have is exactly what we need in that moment. Even if our beginning is right there in the midst of addiction, or our beginning is right there in the midst of some other kind of dependency, or wherever we might find ourselves, however our psychology or our bodies, maybe we're missing, you know, both limbs, or, you know, we having gotten ourselves down a terrible path of unhealthiness, we find ourselves marred and limited. It doesn't matter. Now is still the right time, and we still have all the grace that we need to stay very little, and maybe the damage in our bodies is a continual reminder of our littleness, like St. Paul's wound in the flesh, the thorn that he carried, that helped him to say, helped him to hear from Christ, "My grace is sufficient. Power is made perfect in weakness." He needed that constant reminder. We don't know exactly what it is, psychological, emotional, physical, whatever it was. He needed that constant reminder. So Christ knows what we need. But the question asked very beautifully is, suppose a person has for many years repeatedly committed a serious sin, but now he has repented, been forgiven, turned his life around to God. Does his mind and soul remain damaged in some way by that history of sin? Or can God in his mercy heal that soul completely? Yes. That's a nice answer, right? That's the both and of Catholicism. Really, what we need most to become saints, God will do. And if we need some limitation, because the limitation doesn't hold us back. It doesn't prevent us from the greatest heights of holiness. And so those little people that I met in prison, or those people whose minds have been maybe so damaged by years of, I don't know, cocaine or opioids or whatever it is, and you know, or for whatever, maybe from a severe illness, you know, there's been some scar. It's not even then, there's no moral fault even in any of that necessarily, maybe from weakness. But the point being that there maybe remain some scars in our bodies, inside or outside. It won't hold us back. But can God also heal? Absolutely, God can heal to the depths, transforming us from deep within. God can heal. And he does that also as a radiant light to give hope. Sometimes if people didn't see that light of hope from healing, they might lose courage and fall by the wayside, saying that I can never carry the weight of this cross the distance. I need that healing. Can you do it, Lord? Yes. Yes, he can. Yes, he can. And he loves to. He loves to heal us from deep within and even lift us up as an example, maybe to give hope to others. So we can always, we must always, have hope in that for ourselves and for others. And we can be certain, furthermore, that the healing will be complete now or later, in this life or in the next. God doesn't leave us somehow in this way, not fully alive, or not fully human, or in some way more fundamentally limited, but he opens the greatest capacity to receive all that he is and to really renew us from deep within. So a beautiful question. I love that so much. Thank you for asking that. And then finally we have you're tough. Give us some concrete examples of pure love. Give us a how-to novel here, Father Retreat Master. Come on now. Enough of these vague descriptions. You know, I saw this video, and I'm sure I wrote down in our notes, it was another Retreat Master who came in and spoke to our seminary, but he showed this video of a day in prison. They had taken these prisoners and had prepared them and had prepared their families and had this kind of like open day to bring the families, I think it was all men in prison, and so like the wife perhaps and children to be with their father or husband in prison in some cases for the first time ever. You know, somebody who had been incarcerated for 10 years, 12 years, had never seen his daughter. She's, you know, 10, 12 years old. And they had just beautifully prepared, they coached these men who had never actually concretely been fathers, coached them in how to be a father. You're going to have one day with your child. We're going to help you do that the best that you possibly can, to give them dignity, help them to feel who they are and to step out of whatever cycle of maybe self-centeredness or whatever it was that they might have cultivated, that fatherhood not developing in the natural way, just to give them a glimpse. And there's this scene, you know, so all the prisoners are there. It's like a big gym setting. And this one girl is, you know, they point to, now she's seen pictures, you know, but they point, there he is. And she just, she's never met her father in person before. And she just breaks out into this full out sprint, running full force, jumps at her father, grabs him around the neck and tackles him to the ground, lays him out. I think it's an act of pure love. So beautiful. Oh, you just couldn't watch this and not just be filled up with tears for the absolute unconditional. I mean, her father's a prisoner who has never been in her life. And what incredible forgiveness. What incredible acceptance. Just the pure outpouring of her heart. So what does that look like for us? I think I can let you translate that into some terms. How do you tackle your daddy? How do you just tackle him with your love? Does it take some kind of heroic action? Do you have to fly to China and become a missionary to people who have never heard of Jesus to do that? Well, you could. That's a fine way to tackle your daddy if you want to, but it doesn't start there. It starts already in the littlest actions. Already now in adoration. Can you just allow that pure, total, unconditional love to well up in your heart as a little child and to just see in this one who has, unlike a father in prison, one who has never been absent, one who has given us everything freely, one who has never demanded anything from us in return, but has only ever wanted our good, has only ever given us pure love. Can we allow that just surge of love to well up in our hearts for him? I think it's a starting place. I think it's a place from which we can begin to imagine what a pure act of love would look like. And then can we imagine blending that into our activities? Blending that into our daily service, blending that into our duties, blending that into all of the things that we do, whether in prayer or in works, in sleeping or in waking, in our meals or in our walking or whatever. Can we just imagine pushing that pure love into everything? I think it's what Therese is teaching us, what John of the Cross is teaching us. So I just want to say a word or two from Father Ian Matthews, again, to give us a starting point. You know, we're always playing this balance of, you know, it's nice when you have Father Boniface and he can speak about all these, you know, wonderful things and these beautiful images. And it's like, oh, when I hear you talk about it, I start to believe it's possible. And then he stops talking and I don't know what to do from there. So, but really we already have within us, really, wherever we are, whatever's happening within us, it's the right starting place. And we can help, we can believe that even more by seeing that the stuff in us that we want to look at the least, even that's the right starting place. It's one of these things, you know, not everybody is as tall as Father John and can reach up to the height to, you know, get that light bulb or to light that candle over there, or to, you know, not all of us can reach up, but all of us can bend down to touch the floor. And that's where we have this great hope that even the things on the floor, in fact, the things on the floor are beautiful places to bring before the Lord in prayer. Now, if you can reach up to whatever height you can, oh, it's all so beautiful. Joy, success, thanksgiving, the delights, work well done, lives that you've touched, beautiful things. Don't ever set those aside too quickly. Go into that by all means. But sometimes we can't find that. And what's really presenting itself to us is a throbbing wound, is a place of need, is an ache of limitedness, of weakness, of failure. Sometimes that's what presents itself more immediately. Sometimes we've fallen because of our own weakness, sometimes even because of our sinfulness, choosing something that we shouldn't have, and we know it, and we find ourselves on the ground. The ground is also a good place to pray from. In our prostration, whether because we prostrated ourselves out of love or because we fell flat on our face, it's a good starting place for prayer. Father Ian Matthews draws that from St. John of the Cross. He says, the place within us where everything is not all right, where the wound that is in you aches, John says, go there. Why? Because Christ also prostrated himself. Christ also fell to the ground. Because Christ is there at that wound, at that place where everything is not all right within us. Jesus is there. He went to that place. He fell so that he would already be there when we fall, and we'll find him there. Christ stands at that place of need. Our need points to God. Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me groaning? You fled like a stag, having wounded me. I went out in search of you, and you were gone. Father Matthew says, our need is even the measure of our dignity. The fact that we can have such a deep need, he says, it's the reverse image of our greatness. Because there is no need that God won't fill. In fact, many times, this comes up so often in the saints, we pretend our need is less. And God actually wants us to see that our need is greater. Sometimes we ask for less. We ask for too little. St. Faustina was asking that for every stitch of her cross-stitching, of her crocheting, God would save one soul. And Jesus says, you ask a lot. And she says, but for you, that's better. And he says, well, that's true. Ask for more. Recognize that our need is greater. Sometimes we're afraid to get in touch with the ache in us that longs for everyone to be saved. Sometimes we hardly dare to hope, and we hardly dare to need. But isn't that what Christ cried out for? And what if we opened up that in our own hearts? Going to that place of need, or the need in our own brokenness. Are there people in your life that it's so hard to be charitable to? I can think of several just like that. My heart is so small. Going to that place where I struggle. Going to that place where I'm too weak. Going to that place where I've been impatient, where I've given in even to frustration, where I've chosen to flee rather than to respond in charity, going to that place of weakness. Maybe I still don't have the courage. I can't force myself to be charitable. Saint Therese dazzles me when she goes to the sister who drives her crazy and everyone else. She dazzles me. I hardly know how she does it. Such incredible freedom. But I can at least go to my weakness and my failure to love in that extreme and hold that out to Jesus and say, I want to love like that. You can help me. Father Matthew says, summarizing again, number one, go to that place of need, the ache, the wound, because Christ is there. Number one and number two, our need, Christ is there. And then he summarizes and says, much of St. John of the Cross's system is really about this, trying to get us there, to the place of our need, to get us to go there and stay there. Because the desert can be scary. It can be hard for us. And I want to say, this is Father Boniface now, I want to say, you know, God gave us defense mechanisms for a reason. Sometimes we need them. So, lest we push ourselves to the point of, I don't know, extreme disaster or something, I often think of it like, you know, really hot bath water. You know, you stick your toe in there and it's like, yeah, oh, ouch. And then you stick your toe back in that and move it around a little bit, and then two toes, and then, you know, ease our foot into it. But that's what it's like when we really start going to that place of our deep need, of our weakness. It burns. It can be hard, and there's no shame in pulling our foot back, catching our breath, and maybe easing into it just a little bit at a time, maybe next time. But the more that we build our faith that Christ is there, that he has really gone there, and that we can really meet him there, it helps us to put another toe into that place. And Jesus is so gentle with us. He's so merciful. He doesn't throw us into the deepest darkness. He doesn't cast us into the desert. And we're also certain that he went there first. He went ahead of us. And there's no darkness in which he doesn't already dwell to be with us. But we need to build our faith and our hope. And then we look again. Can I touch that wound? Can I touch that place of darkness? Can I go there to be with Jesus? He's inviting me. He's reaching out his hand to be with me. Can I find him there in that wound? It might be a struggle in the present, like I said, a person that's hard to be with, like the sister of St. Therese in the Carmel. You can't hide from somebody in the monastery. It's very nice. You really can't hide from somebody in the Carmel. We can hide a little bit better at St. Vincent, but you really can't hide from somebody in the Carmel. But it might be a place in the past as well. It might be a wound where there's a lot of darkness. And God has protected us even to be able to move past that. But is he calling us? Are we open to it? We can't be foolhardy and force ourselves there. It's really his invitation we need to listen for. But is he calling us back to a place where we were hurt? And he's going to show us a new dimension of it. Shine a light on it and see how his face, his holy face, is already there in the midst of it. How his love, his fatherly love, had already planted the remedy. Maybe in this time of prayer, for some wound that you've been carrying, maybe for a long time. And he just invites us to step into it and to open up that ache to him. Father Matthew says, this summarizes the ascent of Mount Carmel. In the ascent, John expends his energy encouraging us not to lose our nerve or settle for a cheap alternative. And that's the thing about the defense mechanisms. Use them. It's okay. God is gentle with us. But at the same time, keep knowing where the wound is and listening for the voice that beckons us. We don't want to settle for a cheap alternative. He says, when the wound that is in you begins to ache, or the anesthetic in you starts wearing off. So again, he sees God's initiative, the aching wound, God's initiative, the anesthetic wearing off, God's initiative. Do not grasp for compensation. Stay there. Show yourself. You can stand there. Don't be a slave to fear of not being anesthetized. Risk stepping into that open space where you need God, very gently. but a beautiful invitation, an act of hope. When you feel that act welling up in your heart, maybe tonight, maybe you take a little step closer. Father Matthew says, in the books of the Dark Night, John is talking to people who are being taken there. John's nada, his nothing, is mystical, a nothingness into which he himself was led, far beyond the regions of his expertise. In that aching, open, darkened place, the temptation is to read the openness as emptiness and to panic. John says rather, stay there. Let God work there. Say yes to the God who is feeding you precisely there. To the question, where is God? John is answering by pointing to where we felt most needy. And now, I've already gone on way longer than I wanted to, but this is really important. Something so beautiful happens in this, not just for ourselves. I've described it so much already in those terms. A healing, a sanctification, a purification. So many beautiful things happen for ourselves, our intimacy with the Lord being drawn deeper, but something else happens. Listen to this. Father Matthews describes it so beautifully. He says, when in night John seeks words for the wound that is in him, it is the cries of Israel that surface, the Psalms, Lamentations, Job individuals who voiced the pain of their people, the wound to which John descends, where have you hidden, connects with the pain of the world. Listen to this image, so beautiful. It is as if deep beneath the surface where we perform and survive, there lay a reservoir of weakness where we are all one. A reservoir of weakness where we are all one. Beneath that threshold where we perform and survive. And we all do that in our own ways. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, those are the heights that we reach up to. And we all reach to different heights and we're all in different places and those are beautiful things. But you know where our feet are standing? Every one of us. There's a threshold below a certain point, you know, below our knees or below our ankles, whatever it is, there's a reservoir of weakness. And that's what we all have in common. That's where we all stand together. We all have that human weakness, and Jesus stood in that same reservoir with us. And so we don't need to climb out of that and try to get on top of it and try to make our lives all entirely a performance. We can sink down a little bit and find our footing in that human weakness, in our existential need for God. And Jesus is there, and our brothers and sisters are there. And sometimes people that we have no connection with because all of our reaching up and our performing and our surviving maybe is all in the realm of faith. And what about the atheist? What about the criminal? What about the broken one? What about the place where we're all united with them is in that reservoir of weakness? And when we have the courage to shine the light of faith in there and get drawn in a little bit by seeing our own weakness, we bring that light of faith to people who can be so lost. This is Therese's eating the bread of unbelievers. She allowed God to take her into that deep place, and she held on to hope and to faith, even when it seemed so eclipsed, and when she felt so deeply the weight of it, and she brought light and grace to unbelievers. There is a universal cry, and there is a mission in that. Touching those weaknesses, those wounds, touching that need and holding it out to the Lord has a missionary quality. It holds out not only our own need, but the need of so many others who share that with us, who dip into the same waters with us. And so to conclude, Father Matthews says, this is what Christ has done. Christ is the guarantee of this. The wounded Christ, a brother in our need. So John puts at the head of his treatise, Ascent Night, the picture of Jesus reconciling humanity, restoring the universe, by entering the black hole where God seems not to be, John knows an annihilated Christ who was compelled to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? This was the most extreme forsakenness he had felt in his life, and by it he did his greatest work, greater than any he had done in his life. That is, he reconciled and united the human race with God. The journey to our poverty, then, is not a private affair. The healing of the world is at stake. This, then, is a way of prayer, to feel our way to the wound that is in us, to the place of our need. Go there, take it, name it, hold it before Christ. Like Our Lady, they have no wine.